your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Jennifer Coffendaffer with us to talk more Koberger, because that's what we like to talk about here quite often. And there's so much to dissect. And one of the big things that we've been dissecting now for almost 3 years is the name Papa Roger. Was it him? Was it not him? The official answer is no, it wasn't, because, well, we did a, quote, deep dive, and I don't really know what that means other than it says we looked at the IPs and they didn't match. Well, there's VPNs. And that doesn't really mean it's the end of the story. We take a closer look today at, you know, Koberger's personality. The more we're learning about it from all these different folks who have worked with him, who had him as a teaching assistant, who had him as a teacher, who had him as an acquaintance. I don't even want to say friend, because I don't think any of those truly existed. And we learn about an interesting trait of his, very combative. Well, so was Papa Roger. That's why he got kicked off of several forums while he was active before creating his own, where it was safe for him to tell everybody how it was. Jennifer, as we learn more about this stuff, I want to know where you're at. I know the official answer is it wasn't him. I've already in my mind, it is. Where are you at?
You know, Tony, I have to go with law enforcement on this. And this is the only reason why. And the reason I know why you're not is because you can't see that evidence before you. And I can't either. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating to me. I want to see every subpoena or search warrant. You know, this case was mostly done via search warrant to get court orders, mm-hmm. as opposed to subpoenas, which was smart. So I want to see that search warrant. I want to see everything to do with metadata, all the VPN, what services Koberger used. I want to see his IP address information, everything I want to see to really be convinced. Mm-hmm. But because they have come down so dogmatically, I just feel like I have to respect that they did everything properly and that they came up with the correct result. I tell you, though, every time I go back and look at Papa, I was just reviewing all my tweets that I did about him for all those months. It's eerie. It's so eerie.
What were you finding? And because you were going back and you probably more than anyone have dug down this rabbit hole and have come up with a lot of evidence that certainly made me believe it was him and many others, and I'm still there. What have you been finding now, retrospectively looking at this, comparing some actions outside that we know were Koberger with then how things reflected over on the Papa Roger end of things?
Well, you know, one of the things that I always thought was fascinating was we all know about the survey that he sent out to criminals that was very asked all these questions and lined out everything about crimes, right? Well, what was interesting is when you juxtapose them against what Papa Roger had to say and the questions that Papa Roger gave on his platform. And it's hilarious. As an example, at DeSales University, why did you choose the victim and target over others? And then Papa Roger would say, why did the killer choose that house over all the others in the area? What do we think the entrance point to the crime scene was? So, and there's many examples of this where the questions exist and then Papa emulates that. Another one, how did you leave the scene? Were you leaving, was there anything you did after you left the scene? And Papa asked, do we think the killer took anything from the house? How long do we think the killer was in the house? So he lines things up very much with that survey he did. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose the victim or the target over others? And this one is really eerie. This post I did months and months or a year and a half ago. He says, regardless of what has been released, I believe this is a sexually motivated crime, which is, of course, what many of us believe and have always said. When you said he was very dramatic in terms of how he did not, he fought with everybody on the platform.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He fought with everybody. Yeah. Argumentative, combative, desperate. What I heard a lot of was, and what you saw, if you look back, it very desperate to prove himself to everyone else in the group, which seemed to be pretty much how he acted around human beings in real life as well. Everyone who has accounts of being with him, they describe the same type of guy. And Koberger doesn't seem all that reinventive of a personality. There seems to be one mode for Koberger, and that's Koberger mode. So I'm not surprised that this online persona seems to have the exact same type of personality as Brian Koberger does, and seems to happen to have the same profile picture as Brian Koberger, which, you know, there's that.
There is that. Yeah, you know, one of the things, I don't know if you recall this, but there was a huge amount of consternation for some reason about the blood that was coming down the wall.
Yeah.
Now, to me, it was obviously blood. It wasn't rust, but there was this huge debate going on social media. Someone wrote, for crying out loud, that's rust dripping on the foundation. The blood theory was debunked in a matter of days. Stop posting about it. And Papa writes, prove it. And then he gives some time and then he comes back and he said, didn't think you could.
Jesus. Yeah, that's not him or anything at all. The VPN masking thing. I mean, when they have come out and they've given their statement, they always do cite that, you know, we did a deep dive. They didn't even mention VPN, but they talk about IPs. And really the answer probably, and I do believe they dug as far as they can. I'm not criticizing them for their dig. I'm criticizing them for their answer of it couldn't be him. It's not him. There's a big difference between that or we just couldn't come to the conclusion. We couldn't, undetermined, I think seems more like a definitive answer to give if it's a VPN involved. Because, yeah, no one's going to get past that. Like, you're not going to figure it out if he was using a VPN. And what we know about him is that he was really scrubbing his tracks as he went along the way. So it's not insane to think that as he was communicating out there, if it was, in fact, him on these servers, that he was using a VPN. Of course he was.
Well, you know, there are specific companies, obviously, that offer these VPNs, and they're numerous.
Yeah.
And certainly the FBI and law enforcement has the ability through court order to get information related to VPNs. Where it gets dicey is when that VPN is routed to any sort of server that's out of this country.
There you go. And that's a lot of VPNs, and it would not be hard to do it.
That's a lot of VPNs, and I would think, just judging from how detail-oriented he was, that he probably knew which VPNs those were, which providers. Yeah. I'm sure he researched it. Yeah. And I say that because we don't have much on his digital trail like we would have expected.
Exactly. I mean, I have a VPN app on my phone. I can log into another country and run things through that if I wanted to. You can pick, you can actively choose, for folks who don't know what how a VPN works, a lot of them you can actively choose where that IP address is, where it's flowing through. So you can pick, usually you want to pick something close to you because you have a faster connection. But if you really want to hide it, I could pick Australia or something, just as Koberger could, or anyone could. If you're trying to hide your trail or your tracks or something, or whatever reason you may be using a VPN for. And that to me is just, I don't know. It seems like there's a really easy explanation for why we couldn't get much further than we could identifying who Koberger was. The Papa Rogers account, as we know, very combative. One of the biggest points the account mentioned was that sheath before it was publicly revealed. Some people have criticized that, saying, well, that was a good guess. They were talking about a fixed blade knife. Well, the fixed blade knife is an easy guess. That would be one I think most people could throw out there. But talk of the sheath, I mean, still, that really, again, you got that. You got the profile that looks like him. You got the personality that seems to be him. I don't know what more we need. If we were trying him at court, are you Papa Roger? I think the evidence points to it being Brian Koberger.
Well, and I want to quote that exact knife sheath post by him, because it is eerie. This was on November 30th. He says, of the evidence released, the murder weapon has been consistent. So this is before we even knew for sure that it was a fixed blade knife. Sorry, caveated that. Going back, of the evidence released, the murder weapon has been consistent as a large fixed blade knife. Mm-hmm. So this was unknown on November 30th.
Yep.
Large fixed blade knife. We knew it was a sharp cutting instrument, but there's all sorts of knives. But he's very specific. Then he says, this leads me to believe they found the sheath. This evidence was released prior to autopsies. He's talking about the fixed blade knife, I believe, when he says this evidence was released. So, as you say, it is shocking that anybody would have that guess. Although, I did research and look back, and I saw, I think, one other account that made a similar comment. Now, they didn't have all these other comments that Papa Roger has, where you have, you know, all these comments that are suspect. But they said something about the sheet. Also, also recall this, on December 29th, that was when Papa Roger was kicked out of his group. And then he made it and became an admin. And then a alias Papa Roger, that was called Papa Roger, had the exact same profile picture. He joins the group, and a lot of people are confused and believe that that is the real Papa Roger.
Yep. And that's where the problem comes in, is a lot of, you'll get that response of, well, he was active after. That was a different one. That was a copycat. That was someone who knew there was some blood on the Papa Roger name and thought, oh, well, this could be him. I'm going to go be a copycat and throw it out there. That would be my guess on that other one, actively posting after he was already arrested. This is another interesting find about Koberger. And if you look at his writings as Papa Roger, if it's him, then go back and look at his writings in his complaint letters to the guards. And just look at the way he terms things. Look at the way he conveys information. It's very similar.
Yeah, it's interesting. I tried to actually, this is how far down the Roger rabbit hole I got.
Yeah.
I started looking at punctuation.
Okay.
Because different people punctuate very differently. Like, as an example, I often don't punctuate. I purposefully don't punctuate when I'm on Twitter, because I don't want to punctuate. I want the person to wonder, is it a question mark? Is it a exclamation point? You can read into that whatever you will, that statement I'm making, right? So I purposely often don't punctuate. When he writes, he sometimes punctuates and sometimes doesn't. So I couldn't even get a read on that.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be able to. He used the word dolt, D-O-L-T, which isn't used very often, which is like a dumbass.
Yeah, a dolt. Dolt. Yeah, yeah.
And that's another sort of, I consider it something in academia, right? Very well-educated people sort of use the word dolt. I always found that interesting, and I tried to find it in all his other writings. I couldn't. I found it interesting he wrote The Killer Lived Alone. This was very early on. Again, back to those eerie things. He also wrote Breaking News, A White Car is Driving Somewhere in the Americas, which I thought was interesting. Always trying to deviate away from the white car, which he knew he was very much linked to. And as we're seeing come out now, everything he did after he realized, oh my gosh, they're focusing on the white car.
Yeah.
Like his new, the searches that have been revealed recently.
Yeah. And we are now seeing just how paranoid he was getting right up until the point where he was arrested on that December 29th at his parents' home, searching terms like wiretap. And this is another one that gets me. Psychopaths paranoid. So he's literally sitting there identifying as a psychopath, I guess, at this moment in time, or he just wants to join the club and, you know, emulate what they do. What do psychopaths do when they might be getting caught? How do they act when they're paranoid? It's another very mechanical aspect to Koberger that really makes him feel not human. And just following the script of something. Were you surprised at just his level of paranoia right when they came in on him? Or, you know, obviously, it shows a level of some self-awareness that he's not unstoppable, because he was watching this stuff like a hawk.
Yeah, no, he was so paranoid. And I agree with you. The fact he labeled himself not as an incel, as a psychopath, you know, at least in what they found. Again, I always caution, because they found so little, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, you know, he only searched a few things? No, he probably searched hundreds of things. Just think how many research in a
day.
But he did such a great job covering it all up.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, look at these gems here to show how paranoid he really was, and how he identified, I think, was really important. I think he knew he was a psychopath from this.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder, like, how... I wonder what that feels like to because most psychopaths aren't necessarily in tune with their psychopathy. They're kind of just like, they just keep going and doing their thing. They don't lean into it. But it seems like Koberger's like, yeah, I'm psycho, and this is what I'm going to search for. And does that strike you as odd, that he's literally identifying as a psychopath?
No, because I think many of them do. It's just in their ages, or, you know, everything we have evidentiary wise on them, we didn't see them talk about it. And that's what I always said about Papa Roger. For me, why I found it so intriguing was because this was the modern era of BTK writing to the Wichita Eagle and Beacon, or Cake TV, right? This was taunting and you know, taunting law enforcement and the public at an all new level. And that's why I thought this was so interesting. But I just don't think it's him, only because law enforcement says that it isn't. But man, I want to see the evidence.
Then who is it?
We don't have any.
Who could it possibly be if it's not him? I guess would be my question to you.
Yeah, well, I think law enforcement has determined that. I really do.
Yeah.
I just think they haven't released it. I think for them to come out and not just say, listen, we never developed that, or we don't know. They're so sure of themselves. So it makes me think they've identified that.
Are they, or do they just use the wrong terms when they presented this? That's my like, maybe you use a little too overconfident of terms or saying it like, and I'm like, okay, cool. I just love to know more. And if they do know who it is, why would they not? I suppose there's privacy issues there. If it is someone else, to say, hey, it was you. Not everyone may feel happy about that, their identity being thrown out there, but I don't know, but they haven't said that either. They haven't said, we know who it is. They just said, we don't think it's him.
Well, we know early on they did think it was him.
Mm-hmm.
There was source information out there. Dateline talked about it. There was definite source information. And we know they had a great source that said it was Papa Roger. This was in the earlier time frame, right? And then we know follow-up from that. We now see the documents. I mean, I'm posting these documents where they are doing a deep dive on Papa. So even law enforcement was convinced it was Papa.
Yeah.
And then now they're saying it's not. I want to see those documents that say, even if they black it out, redact it, where's the one that says, based on this review, because the review we saw was so weak, it didn't really say anything.
Yeah.
I want to see the one that says, the IP address associated with all the Papa Roger postings are this person redacted.
Yeah. Something. Just something. Yeah. It's the mystery that at this point doesn't really matter all that much. But what matters to me about it is I feel like they're missing something. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like they needed to dig deeper on that one. And maybe that's something we should be paying more attention to in the future in the modern age of these monsters like this is, you know, it's not the Wichita Eagle. We're not just going to get the data off of the disc that he did at his church in Park City. We got to dig deeper into these sort of characters, even when there is a VPN. Maybe there needs to be some more precaution. I don't know. I don't know what you could do to possibly outmaneuver folks like this. If they want to be anonymous, they want to get their message out there, they're going to find ways to do it without being tracked. I just feel like we hit this brick wall and didn't dig deeper to see what's behind the brick wall, because I think there's more to it. It's a facade of a brick wall. It's one of those thin rock ones where it just falls away and it's like, oh, it's a, there's something back here. Let's talk.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say what we've been allowed to see, 1,000% agree with you.
Yeah. Let's talk about September 3rd, because that's been up in the air and people have talked about, well, you know, technically there is a way he could appeal to September 3rd this way, that way, the other way, maybe somehow kind of. You had a good conversation the other day on your podcast, Break the Case, with Attorney Ehrenberg, I believe. And you guys talked about that a little bit. Give me your insights on this. September 3rd is coming up. Why is that such a big date here?
Well, essentially, there's a case called Garza versus Idaho, which I find very interesting that it was actually in Idaho. And so this is very relevant. It went up to the Supreme Court. And essentially, this fellow named Garza, he pled guilty, just like Koberger. So the fact pattern, he wasn't a murderer, but it was the same situation. He pled guilty. He signed a plea agreement and he waived his right to appeal. But after sentencing, Garza said to his attorney, listen, I know I waived my right, but I want you to file it anyway. And the attorney said, well, I'm not going to file it. And so this went all the way up to the Supreme Court because he sought relief saying, listen, my attorney is not fulfilling their Sixth Amendment duty because I'm asking for it to be filed whether I waived it or not. So essentially what the Supreme Court said in a nutshell was, wait a minute. You have to show that the attorney was deficient in some way and in some way didn't provide, the due, what an attorney must do under the Sixth Amendment.
Sure. And so ineffective assistance of counsel is what he was trying to argue.
What I was trying to say.
That's how I do it all the time. I describe words.
Describing words salad here. Sorry about that. So anyway, that is a point that at least Brian Koberger, he could do that. He could say, Ann Taylor, I want you to file an appeal. And if Ann Taylor says no, we could go down that same road. And I think it would end up in nowhere land, just like with Garza.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's not over until it's over. Or she could say, okay, I'm going to file one. And then we could see where that would ferret out in the court system. But it's not over until November 30th. September 3rd. That was the date of, the timeline given.
How would that be ineffective assistance of counsel? I mean, it's like saying, I want to go into the bowling alley, but they're closed. The doors are closed. But I want to bowl. Well, just break the window open and go grab a ball. Like, that, no one would say, well, that's an okay thing to do. It's like, these are the rules. They've already been set. We've agreed to them that this is a closed business. You can't just go in and do this. You've already said you're not going to file this. There's no avenue for you to file this anymore. Your attorney would be wasting time even making this paperwork out because you can't file it. You can't, you won't be seen. But I guess what that is saying is, well, maybe it will.
Well, and I want to make another point, which I really didn't do a good job of finishing up what happened after the original rule.
Yeah.
Ruling. The decision was actually reversed again in a 6-3 ruling. And so the court actually held that there was a presumption of prejudice. So anyway, the court basically said that an appeal of a waiver is not absolute and does not eliminate the right to challenge the validity and fundamental claim. So this is why, from a legal standpoint, this isn't necessarily quite over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that I think we all need to, hopefully September 4th comes and nothing happens.
Yeah. Do you... It's a weird, I mean, do you think he would file an appeal at the outset of the trial, after the verdict was handed down and he went away and agreed, you know, he's not going to appeal, all that stuff. I would have said it that day, yeah, I don't think he's going to do anything. After reading all of his complaint letters and how little snowflake Brian is thus far in prison, I wouldn't imagine he's already trying to draft an appeal himself behind bars in his little notepad there. I think he may be trying to do anything he can to get out of this setting.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if he is going to ask for this.
Yeah.
Because as you said, look at him. He's mad because he doesn't have his 6 required nutritional items on his tray or whatever to fill out the complement of milks and meats and yeah. veggies and fruits or whatever. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I tell you, for the first time, I wonder if he is going to make it. I've never really thought about it before now, watching all these silly complaints he has. He seems like such a snowflake.
He's going to die. Yeah. I mean, it's not, he's not going to survive in there. I'm very surprised by the amount of snowflakeness we've already seen in the course of literally a couple weeks. All of it, and the idea that he has that he's going to file these complaints and they're somehow not going to get out to the public, that they're all going to, I don't know what he's thinking, but it's nothing he clearly paid attention to when studying with anybody about the prison system. And maybe they don't teach it. Maybe they don't talk about what works and what doesn't in there. But like naming the folks off and calling out people for saying things like, the only we're going to be eating today is Coburgers. Oh, it's this guy that said that. That also not going to pan out well for you, Brian, behind bars. But he didn't seem to take any or read any books on this before going into his cell on how to survive.
Well, I would say this, and from the beginning, people in academia, they study, you know, myself, criminology, yep. right? Anybody who studies criminal justice at all levels, academically, you got it down.
Yeah.
you know the rules, you know what's in place. It's only when you get that real life practical experience of going to jail and going to prison, and I mean even visiting there,
yeah.
that you get a feel for how horrible it is going to be. And I think he's book smart on the topic. And he had, because jail is so different mm-hmm. from prison.
Yeah.
And as a practical matter, he is not coping well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because a lot of people will say prison is better than jail. Jail is better than prison. It probably depends on where you're at. But it seems like Coburger kind of made jail a little bit better than prison, or at least maybe he had more protections there or more freedoms, you know, to take hour-long showers and not worry about things entering orifices, things of that nature. Now it's suddenly things are getting real in the prison.
Well, you know, when he was at the Latah County Jail, I mean, that was Shangri-La. It really yeah. was. Big cell, television, you know, iPad, connectivity to the world,
mm-hmm.
You know, vegan diet. It was unbelievable. Ashley Banfield did a good job of just breaking down how spoiled he was in that environment. But then, you know, they got the great idea to move to Ada County, which I will continue to say was one of the biggest mistakes they made in this case, at least for, you know, Brian Koberger. And things changed. It got a little tougher. Mm-hmm. This is so different if you've been in prison before. I mean, those doors closed, the smell of that place, the inmates, these inmates are the worst of the worst. They could give a crap and they can stay up for hours and berate him over those vents. And I say, keep going.
Yeah. I keep saying I'm smelling canteens being filled by the minute. As we read these stories, it's like, I bet people are calling up there like it's the telethon at Labor Day. It's like, let's call. I don't need your free John Tesh CD as an incentive to donate to the coffers of the inmates there, as long as they keep doing their job. On that note about all of the complaints that he's making, do they have to do anything? I mean, I'm going to imagine he's going to keep filing complaints. Maybe sometime he'll give up at some point in time. But they have some standard of rules in living, and many would argue that, hey, we need to have some more prison reform because things do get a little too fast and loose, to put it lightly, in prisons. Is this just going to be falling on deaf ears as long as Brian likes to keep complaining, or is he going to make an impact if he just keeps stacking up complaint after complaint every day?
No, they're not going to change anything. As long as he is not being physically assaulted or abused in some way or in harm's way, there is no way anything is going to change for him. Look, this happens with all these inmates. There's tiffs, there's issues that are not physically an issue. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's just part of it.
Yeah. There's no recourse for bad language, basically. Like, they can call you anything they want. You know, they're not supposed to go and do those things they're talking about doing to you, but they can threaten you all they want. Until it crosses the line, well, then we'll deal with it after. Which I'm really okay with in this sort of a setting. We're starting to learn a little bit more about from other folks who had interactions with Koberger. I found this one really fascinating. I was reading about over the weekend a former professor who had Koberger as his teaching assistant, told his buddy at the end of the day several times at the bar, I got this new teaching assistant, and he's horrible, and his name is Brian Koberger. Professor Snyder is his name. Koberger talked about all sorts of bizarre incidents with him. Koberger following him down the hall, talking endlessly just to waste his time. What he called the terrier routine is what he described Koberger as, like he's a dog. How significant is that kind of need to dominate mundane interactions with a personality like Koberger? Because we hear about the creepy things to women, but he seemed to be just as useless to men, just in a very different way.
Yeah, it's all about dominance and him controlling the situation. He always had to have the last word. Look at those interactions with police. We're seeing four now, you know. Has to have the last word, has to be the one that knows everything. And I think that was sort of what he was talking about, this terrier attack. You know, it wasn't physical, but verbal and just in control. Yeah, the statements that this professor made were really interesting, I thought, and intuitive. But unfortunately, nobody thinks that anybody's ever really going to be a fledgling serial killer, even one under your nose.
Well, one of the students did. She wrote, my TA looks like a murderer.
Well, she called it. And you also had that other, the other professor who said, mark my words, this guy is going to end up, if we give him this degree, this doctorate here, you know, he's going to end up essaying somebody in, you know, no uncertain terms is what he wrote in an email to the faculty. There were people, there were people that were calling out creepy. And there's always people that call out creepy. I like to raise my hand. I'm usually pretty good at nailing creepy and getting it out there when I see somebody like that and going, you better pay close attention to this one. But it doesn't always come across that easy. Koberger seemed to be a pretty obvious one, and a lot of people were sensing it. 13 formal complaints filed against him in just 3 months, most of them women describing intimidation, harassment, belittling comments. That's a pattern. And eventually, obviously, they did get rid of him. Should this be something? I mean, is this something where they can take a little inventory at the college and go, maybe we should look at these things closer, faster, or have more ways of dealing with it and better ways of dealing with it? And I don't know what the answers to those questions are for doing better, but maybe there are ways of doing better at this with, I don't know, even just allowing this guy into the program to begin with.
Yeah, I think the vetting when it comes to our teaching assistants or even our teachers, look at what happened in Arkansas, right in your neck of the woods there. It definitely has a lot of room for identifying issues. But geez, how rare was this, really, a criminology PhD candidate to become a mass murderer in that little town? It's so rare.
Well,
and I just can't imagine, Tony, all the people that might come through that seem a little, you know, weird, half-cocked, you know.
And there, in academia, there are. There are a lot of, you know, I guess, you know, what colloquially some would, you know, odd ducks, things of that nature. And it doesn't make them killers. And I'm not saying that anyone could have predicted he'd go commit a quadruple homicide or something like that. But you could easily get this guy was going to be an essayer. I mean, I don't think that was a hard one to predict. If he had the opportunity, he certainly would have. And who knows if he did, and he'd just never been caught for it before. I doubt that. But it seems that, you know, do we write odd ducks off too much? And maybe there we should take a little closer look at odd ducks. And not always in the way that, you know, let's, you know, go after you and assume you're doing something horrible and bad. But I don't know, sometimes to help the odd ducks, the ones that, you know, would like to assimilate more into society and into their groups and not feel so awkward and odd. Koberger is one of those who identified things were getting awkward and odd and didn't know how to help it. And there really wasn't a whole lot there to like, hey, come on in. Let's try and work on this. At least nothing that spoke to his mindset. And sometimes you got co-workers that just can't be fixed.
Yeah, it's such an interesting topic, I think. No matter what, Koberger couldn't be fixed.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. That's the reality at the end of the day with, I think, a lot of characters like that. A lot of students, though, they had their feelings about the man. And obviously those complaints were filed, but at the end of the day, what do you do? They did their part. Several months in, they got rid of him. So I don't know how much more you can look into something like that. Any more with the Koberger documents, all the things that are continuing to come out? We're seeing new drops every week. We're hearing more testimonies from individuals. Anything in this last week that's really stood out to you that has, you know, kind of raised your radar level of things that you were curious about?
You know, I think what's always bothered me is here he had this K-bar knife and that he never at all stuck himself. And for those involved in stabbings, typically the perpetrator ends up with a wound of some nature, especially against four victims in this very deadly way with a K-bar.
Yeah.
I was always surprised a little bit that even with his gloves on and his coverings, that he wasn't stabbed or fighting, you know, that something didn't penetrate the skin and possibly cause DNA either from his sweat or from blood to leak out and be found.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at something today that bothered me. And that was, you know, 7 months later, almost in June, that there were a blanket and a coat that were presumptively test positive for blood. Now, it could have been one of the victims, you know, but why 7 months later?
Mm-hmm.
So little things like that really bother me. It doesn't mean that Brian Koberger isn't guilty at all. But I just, it makes me wonder, are there any holes?
Well, because I saw your tweet on that today. The origin of this, of the coat and the blanket, where did they come from? Was this in Koberger's possession? Was this in the house? Where are we talking here?
It was in the house, at 1122 King Road, it shows. And it's kind of one of these police reports that people do when they say, oh, geez, I should have documented a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back and document. You can tell that because it talks about Ann Taylor. And then in the next paragraph, it talks about these items collected. You know, it's sort of random, compilation of different items that they're trying to get documented. And then they list the items and then they say, oh, by the way, I did a presumptive blood test and it came up positive on the blanket with pink on it and on a green coat, I think with pink as well. And that's all it says. And so I'm looking now for, and we haven't gotten a lot of the lab stuff, but I want to see where it says, yeah, so I sent it in, which I don't see there, to be tested to the lab. And I just wonder, was it, you know, hey, did you guys test that? Was it Maddie's? Was it Kaylee's? Was it Koberger's?
I feel there's little areas in this case. I'm not an investigator. I'm just the Monday morning quarterback with a microphone and a YouTube channel. But I feel like there's little things in here. They're like, why didn't we look a little closer at this? And nothing, none of it like changes that Koberger did it. It's just more like we were about to go to trial and this wasn't quite up to snuff yet. It wasn't quite ready for prime time, if you will, I think, had that trial begun. I feel that way on Papa Roger. I kind of feel that way about that too. And I don't know what the answers are to some of those questions other than maybe, you know, we just don't know the other half and had this gone to trial. There's another part to this report. There's another part to the Papa Rogers that maybe we would see. Maybe we still will see at some point in time.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part. I mean, you know, I've got only 500 pages from the state police, and I guarantee you there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages that we don't have yet.
Yeah.
Moscow has given some, but they haven't given everything. And forget about the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not going to see, remember, 60 agents at one point were assigned to this case, 60 agents, and all the analysts that were assigned across the country working on the trying to figure out that Elantra, that plate, who might have owned it and all of that, scouring all that information. I don't know if and when we'll ever see any of those reports because FOIA to the Bureau are extremely difficult to get information from them.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. One of those, however, does not seem to be, did we get the right person? I think that one is pretty well answered. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you so much for coming on here and giving us your insight. Be sure to check out Jennifer's channel, Break the Case, which you can get on YouTube, or you can also listen anywhere you get podcasts. You're now part of our podcast network, so you can hear her anytime on there. Just search Break the Case wherever you get your podcasts. You got some really fascinating interviews coming up here. I know in this next week or so, what do you have on deck here?
Well, I'm really excited. I'm going to be interviewing one of the homicide detectives that I worked a case with in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas homicide for decades. Also was featured on 48 Hours multiple times. So kind of a star of his own. No, he's a very quiet, just great guy. Anyway, Dale Lundberg is going to be joining, and we're going to be breaking down Delphi a little bit more.
Great.
I know it's adjudicated. I know Richard Allen's gone, but we're going to talk about it a little bit from his vantage point. And then also have another podcast coming up about Brian Koberger, kind of breaking down some more items that we talk about here a lot.
Yeah.
And some people ask Tony, you know, hey, listen, he's gone. He's, you know, why are we talking about this? And the reason, at least for me, is it's been almost 3 years of not being able to see anything on a case we were all very invested in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about really trying to see and understand in detail this investigation and this case, because all we've ever gotten are snippets.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, we're still getting a block of Swiss cheese, Tony.
Yeah. No. So, you know. As long as there's information to be had, I think we're going to be talking about this case. And a lot of this, you know, we would have been doing this had the trial been going on right now as it was coming out in court. But we've all been waiting for this information to be revealed. And yeah, it's good to look back on these things. It's good to poke holes in things. It's not always just let's criticize and let's say, well, this was done bad or this was done right or whatever. It's like, I think in anything, what can be done better? There will be more Kobergers. And the more that we can learn from past investigations, what went right, what went wrong, the faster I think law enforcement can get to stopping them, you know, before they strike again. Who knows how long it would have been before Koberger would have gone again had that sheath not been found. He seemed to be, you know, ready to go at another moment's notice. So fascinating
stuff.
Well,
he had that K-bar on order.
Yeah, exactly.
I think ready to order, at least searching it.
Check out her podcast, Break the Case, wherever you
want more on this case and others. Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,